BlizzCast, your official Blizzard podcast.
Welcome everyone to another episode of BlizzCast. My name is Kevin Yu, your community manager for StarCraft II, also known to you guys as Karun on the boards. And with the game on the horizon, we've brought our heavy hitters back, production director Chris Siggety and game director Dustin Browder, to talk a little bit about the game and what the community can expect when they get their hands on it. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Hey,
thanks for having us.
So the multiplayer has been, you know, tried, tested, and, you know, we've really, like, gone through the beta and so forth. What are some of the experiences that you think, as far as, like, how the community has responded to the games online? How has this whole experience been for you guys?
I mean, from my perspective, the beta was probably our best experience yet as far as betas go, certainly in our RTS games. You know, it's been very difficult to get to a balanced point in our previous products. And this time through, we put out a number of patches, listened to a lot of feedback from the community, and are at a very good launching point for the game.
You know, what's so great about, I think, the StarCraft II beta was that the community was so knowledgeable about not only the game, you know, even before they got to the beta, because they knew so much about the original StarCraft, but are also so knowledgeable about sort of what of our design goals were in making the game. They sort of understood immediately what we were trying to accomplish. And so they're very quickly able to sort of jump on board, get really good at the game, and really help us with some really, you know, sort of great feedback and great ideas as how to sort of move the game forward. For, you know, personally playing the beta, it was probably one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had as a gamer, being able to get online, play with these thousands and thousands of gamers every night, right, and see the kinds of strategies they were doing, you know, play through 1v1 and 2v2 games. It was just really a lot of fun, I think, for everybody here at the studio to be able to play with the fans, finally, in this game we've been waiting for so many years.
Definitely. I mean, so far, speaking more in detail about those strategies, how do you think those strategies are kind of meshing out, you know, early, mid, late stage game for each of the different races, and, you know, especially adding all these new abilities and new units from StarCraft II as well?
Well, one of the things we learned in the beta very early, obviously, was a lot of rush strategies that we weren't quite prepared for, that we thought we had under control before we went live with the beta, and we found out pretty quickly over the course of, I don't know, 7 or 8 patches, I think, we were still fixing some of the core rush strategies. And it's always sort of a, you know, a tough balance for us, because we want to make sure that rush strategies are possible, that it is possible to overcome an enemy with a rush, but at the same time, we don't want the rushes to be unstoppable. And our sort of core design value is a rush should be as easy as to stop as it is to do, right? Mm-hmm. And we're still sort of working all those kinks out yet. So I think in many cases, we've improved it quite a bit. I think most of those are under control, but we are trying to keep an open mind as to what may still be out there that we don't know about, right? We come up with phase 2 of the beta. We're going to watch and see, you know, how those rush strategies, you know, are sort of continuing to evolve, and we'll keep sort of watching those going forward. As far as sort of the mid and end game strategies, we're seeing a lot of variance in a lot of the matchups. Not all of the matchups yet are 100% where we want them to be. Terran versus Terran matchup, as the beta was sort of coming to an end, of the first phase of the beta was winding down, we were definitely seeing a lot of the same units used over and over and over again, and we tried to make a few changes to sort of break up the logjam and making sure it wasn't just, you know, Siege Tank and Viking primarily used in Terran versus Terran matchups. But we're going to keep watching that matchup very closely going forward to make sure that it does have a wide variety of units used. And in terms of the sort of overall numbers, you know, we started out, you know, with win-loss percentages, you know, pretty in pretty good shape, you know, within 10%, you know, at the beginning of the beta. And as the beta moved forward, as we made patches, as we got really good feedback from the community, we got within 1 and 2% win-loss on all of the matchups by the time we finally finished phase 1 of the beta. So, you know, we're feeling pretty good about where we're at with your chances to win. Mm-hmm. We're feeling pretty good with where we're at in terms of the different types of units you're encouraged to use. Though, again, Terran versus Terran is an example of a matchup that we're not quite 100% on yet. We're not sure. Maybe we're getting closer. We'll have to wait and see. It definitely was a wonderful learning experience for the team. Lots and lots of fun to play, and we really can't wait to get it back into the hands of the community once again.
So going back to some of those creative strategies, I mean, you were saying that you saw a lot of different things. I mean, what could you highlight on a couple of really cool strategies, maybe some strategies also that you guys didn't quite anticipate?
Well, I think examples would be, that I'm sure a lot of the community members have already experienced maybe firsthand, there was lots of Protoss warping strategies using gateways built in the enemy player's town. There was lots of And there still remain many Reaper strategies, especially against Protoss, trying to beat that first Stalker out, which you can definitely do with that first Reaper, and seeing how much damage you can do before that first Stalker comes online and takes you out. It was surprising we didn't see that many dangerous Zerg rushing strategies at the end of the day. Obviously, 7-pool Zerg rush is still a very viable strat, which we're very happy to leave as a viable strategy. There were some timing pushes that still remain that we're sort of waiting to see how those sort of shake out. Timing push, for those who don't know, is sort of there's moments in the game where one player may have sort of a core economic or slight tech advantage that they can use to really take advantage of their opponent, who for just a 30-second window may not be quite ready to go. And if you know that timing, you can really do some damage. So we're still sort of seeing a lot of those sort of shake out. But I think what we were surprised about a lot was a lot of the early Protoss was particularly amusing. A lot of the early Protoss building of gateways, pylons, and different sort of structures inside the enemy town as a way to sort of early push, especially against Terrans. Remember the early days, even almost day one, it was a couple of gateways, you know, in your town with the pylon usually built on low ground outside of the town fundamentally, and the poor Terrans were just seeing zealots in many cases before they had their first marine. Which was, terrifying for that poor Terran player. And so we saw that early on, which I don't think we had anticipated. You know, we obviously internally, are trying to beat each other, but we're not trying to win in 30 seconds or less or 4 minutes or less quite as much as you are when you're playing online. And so by getting it into a live environment where you're suddenly incentivized to just try to win games as quickly as possible, we started to see a lot more early game breaks than we'd ever seen before.
I still think that out there's still other things out there.
Absolutely.
Even though it's a beta, people still get so ultra competitive and they just want to stick with what they think they know wins. So a lot of people, I think, didn't experiment as much as I was hoping they would. I mean, there was a lot of innovative stuff and interesting ideas, but I still think, and we were saying this, I think last time we sat down, that there's a bunker strat out there. I still think that's there. I think we're going to see things develop after the game launches where people, you know, kind of toss aside playing custom or say, I don't care about my record that much. I just want to be, you know, investigating different concepts, and we'll see some interesting stuff still develop even after launch.
Yeah, even throughout the beta, we did see some big changes in the way the game was played based on a few players who were using some strats that we hadn't seen before. You know, we, for a long time, for instance, the Terran versus Terran matchup, we were really excited about because it was almost every unit got used at one point or another. There's a few exceptions, of course, but many of the units were used. It was Marauders, it was Thors, it was Siege Tanks, it was Medivacs, it was everything got used. And then, you know, some more clever players came along and said, hey, you know what you really need? You need Vikings, you need Siege Tanks, right? And they broke it down to that. So, you know, we're sort of waiting to see in many cases. I think this will continue to happen, you know, during the next phase of the beta, after launch, and for years to come.
Sure, yeah.
We will see the strategy of this game continue to evolve. And that's one of the things we're excited about. And part of our challenge as designers on the game is to make sure that we don't, you know, try to react to every change. We saw over the 10 years plus of StarCraft, the original StarCraft and Brood War, how many times did the game change for people? Did they decide, you know, the community sort of changed what was the correct and expected strategies? And really almost no balance changes in many cases happened for those changes to occur. And so our goal is to try to create a game that's big enough, that's got enough options into it, that the correct way to play can change multiple times and we're not doing anything,
right?
And the community's the one inventing the game. The community's the one that's sort of in control of sort of the right way to play because they've discovered the strategies and that the game is deep enough they can keep playing it and keep discovering new strategies for years to come.
So it seems like we were talking earlier too, as the players kind of find their own strategies and find what works for them, it seems like each of the different regions have also kind of found this in different types of timing, right? People are finding like certain regions might like a certain particular race a little bit more than the other races. So how do you think that's kind of evolved, or how that happened, or also too, like how do you guys plan to balance that moving forward?
Well, it's really exciting for us right now. We got to see this because we have some really great data that our business intelligence team has given us this time around, where we can actually look at what's happening in the beta. We can see some statistics of who's winning and losing by what percentages in which countries around the world. And so, you know, in the beta, we saw that in Korea, the Zerg were a very, you know, dominant race to play. And this would have been, I guess, around patch 8 or 9, I think. And they were just very, very powerful. And in the United States and in Europe, the Zerg were very, very weak at literally the same time period with the same game being played. And we went onto the Korean server and we played a lot of games, and we were playing a lot of games already in the United States, obviously. And we had some people playing in Europe, and we could see very clearly there were some strategies that the Korean players were using that seemed very effective. And we weren't sure for quite a while, you know, did the American players already, had they already encountered this and the Korean players hadn't learned it? Or you know, was this something new? We didn't really know what was going on. And as we watched the game evolve, we started to see those strategies then leave Korea and invade the United States and Europe as well. And we saw the numbers then swing much as they had in Korea, where the Zerg became very powerful. This was at a point where you were seeing Zerg players building a lot of spine crawlers. You were seeing them just build spine crawlers, Zerglings, save all their gas, pop as many Mutalisks as they possibly could the moment they had the ability to build Mutalisks and swarm the board with Mutas as fast as possible, particularly against Protoss. So we definitely have seen this kind of thing happen. And we live, you know, thank goodness we live in the age of the internet that we do, where these strategies can travel very quickly now from place to place and from community to community. And I also say thank goodness we have the community that we have that's so aggressive about seeking out and finding the strategies from all over the world. It is, in many ways, especially among us hardest core community, a multinational community that is seeking out strategies from Korea, from the United States, from Europe, all trying to compete, trying to make themselves better. We have community members all over the world going to other places to find these things. So, you know, they did ultimately move that strategy, I think, very quickly. It was within a couple of weeks. You know, we had real-time data, so we could see immediately, oh my God, this is not what we expected, right? Mm-hmm. But they moved it very quickly over. So, I mean, our general goal is, you know, obviously always to keep watching in terms of how we're going to balance for this. I think that incident, at least to us, gives us a lot of faith in the community that they will move the information around, what the best way to play this game will travel from place to place fairly quickly. And so our general goal is going to be, you know, take the feedback, you know, move quickly, but not too quickly, right? We don't make any sudden moves. If we made a sudden move in that case and suddenly changed something, you know, to try to balance it for the States, and it turns out that the Korean strategy was actually going to be the dominant strategy, that would have been a huge mistake. So, you know, we will definitely, you know, wait a couple of weeks when we see something, especially if it's only in one location, to sort of see how it sort of shakes out.
And actually, for a beta, this is unprecedented for us to do it in multiple locations like that. We usually have set up a beta server and had all communities connect to a single location. We'll definitely take that into account the next time. Dustin's totally right as far as the time, and that it did eventually come over, and we still wouldn't, whether everybody was playing on one or not, want to react immediately to any particular tactic that comes up, unless it's just a given that we should immediately react. But in general, that challenge is interesting, but it's also it takes additional time away from us, you know, basically sitting and reacting to the game. If we have to wait and see, is it going to come across? Is it exclusive to that one region? And it was really shocking, actually, as Dustin started to discover it happened, like, whoa, this is a big challenge. So in the future, we'll definitely be looking at that. What it means for future betas, I don't know, but it's possible that in the future for our betas that we would unify and have different languages connecting to a single location so that we definitely see the strats all in the same location.
And these will obviously be very good learning experiences, especially moving forward, since we will probably still have additional betas, right?
Absolutely.
So looking on the other side of the spectrum with the map-making community, so far, since you guys have released the Galaxy Editor, how have you guys felt about, you know, some of the things you guys may have seen on YouTube or, you know, other online, you know, with custom games?
Super excited. I mean, there's amazing stuff out there. I'd encourage anybody who hasn't come along and looked on YouTube and looked at on any of the resources out there. There's just some amazing stuff coming online, and it's still an early version of the editor. You know, like the game itself, we intend to add a lot of features over time as we go into the future, as we patch the game. It's already super exciting what we're seeing, and I think down the line, it's just the potential is massive.
For a lot of our listeners, too, we've seen kind of like racing games, first-person shooters. I mean, this seems like there's been new types of maps that weren't possible also in the original StarCraft as well,
it's
right?
Definitely, I think, the most powerful editor that this team has ever produced. And so, yeah, you're seeing just some amazing, you're seeing action games, you're seeing, you know, the classic tower defense games, you're seeing, you know, side-scrollers, you're seeing first-person shooters in some cases, just some amazing, amazing game types done by this unbelievably creative community. And I think we're all just sort of waiting to see, you know how these guys do when it, you know, goes live. They have better tools. They've had more time, ultimately, to, you know, embrace and understand all the power that's been put in their hands. I think we're going to see some really fun stuff over the next many years.
Should be very exciting. So, also, you guys also mentioned before that created maps by the community could possibly end up in the map pool one day. How is that something that is decided? Is that based on kind of like player popularity online, or is it based on, you know, actual StarCraft 2?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think when we see games that are, you know, maps that are very popular, then we take a look at those maps and then we sort of decide, is that something we want, you sort of rolled into the matchmaker, or is it something that's better kept as a custom map kind of experience? You know, our custom map pool is very specifically chosen, right, to, at least at this point, to try to give us a very specific set of balance and a specific set of information. We've had, you know, a couple of incidents, even in this, you know, in the beta, where we pulled some maps that we felt just were not giving us the balance we wanted, that were kind of abusive for certain races. So we're definitely evaluating these maps going forward. You know, as we see maps from the community, we'll be pretty excited, I think, to roll them in if they sort of meet the criteria that we think is, you know, right for the balance of the game.
Challenge mode is another new feature added to the game. Having challenge mode maps, how do you guys, what was kind of the intention, the goal, the design goals for that, and how do you think that will kind of play out within the community as far as like helping people out?
I mean, challenge mode is something we've talked about it in the past, but I think it's one of the most exciting features that we have in the game from my perspective, because I feel like we finally admitted that single player, the campaign itself, does not teach you how to play online. It does not teach you to be a good multiplayer player. And I think challenges are an attempt to bridge that gap and get players the opportunity to learn some of the things that they maybe weren't paying very close attention to in the campaign. The campaign does teach you some basics. It teaches you that you have to build up units, that you have to acquire resources, but it doesn't tell you how to do that well. And in fact, we really tried to stay away from it because you're already, I think, overwhelmed, or there's so much to learn there. You know, we're throwing a lot at you with new things in the campaign, with a lot of choice, player choice in there. And so we don't want to get you caught up into these things like how many workers should you have harvesting minerals or gathering gas. And In putting challenges in there, they start to get into those specifics and let people understand what they may want to be paying attention to when they get up there into competitive play. So super excited about seeing that do its job, hopefully here after launch.
Right. Yeah, it definitely gives players an opportunity to learn the things they need to learn, right? So it gives them a chance to practice some of these things as well. But I think more importantly, it exposes a wide group of players to some of the basics that maybe they didn't understand, the importance of resource gathering, how powerful it can be if you will use hotkeys, right? How much more dangerous you can be if you understand some of the basic unit counters in the game. It won't turn, you know, a brand new player into a diamond player by any stretch. That's not its goal. But it will absolutely give you a view into the world of competitive gaming and give you some ideas as to the kinds of skills that you need to work on and give you a chance to practice some of those skills. But it'll give you a view of those types of skills and give you some practice of those skills to get you online so that you can one day become, you know, a much better player.
What are some of the challenge modes that you guys have played recently that you guys find, you know, kind of at the cusp of your skill level right now?
I don't know if any of those are still at our cusp of our skill. We've played these so many times now that there's really not a challenge left that I don't think we can just play all the way through in the first time out. But I still have a lot of fun playing through some of the combat modes. We have some spellcaster kind of combat modes where we ask you to destroy as many enemies as possible within a time limit with a set group of units. So you might have, you know, some High Templar and some sentries, and we give you a few minutes to kill as big a base as you can. And we've got you know, some ghosts with some nukes and some ravens with their full energy and all their upgrades, and we say kill as much stuff as you possibly can. And those are always fun to play, even though I've gotten the highest score, you know, that we sort of track. It's always fun to go for a little bit of a higher score to see if I can sort of beat some of the guys in the office to play them. And the hotkey challenge, I think, is always fun too, because a lot of these are open-ended, right? Like, we have, you know, bronze, silver, and gold level play that you can win by playing, and achievements obviously associated with each of these levels of play, but you can always go for a higher score, right? And so that's sort of what we do in the office at this point, is trying to get the highest score possible in some of these challenges. You know, how, using only hotkeys, how many units can you kill in 3 minutes with this Protoss force? And you can always, you know, you did 250, can you do 275? And it always keeps it kind of fresh.
Or if you're having a rough day, you can have a little Sidestorm practice. Or
absolutely, absolutely.
Always pretty fun. So going along with the challenge mode, there's also going to be a tutorial features. What's kind of different about the tutorial features, and how are those going to help kind of new players, you know, get up and running?
Well, there's a couple things about the tutorial from my perspective that I think is makes this our best attempt yet for new players. One is it's in your face. It's right there at the beginning. Our whole menu system kind of presents it that so that new players get into the game, see it right away. The other thing is there's an immersive tutorial playable where you go in through, you can pick the different sorts of things you want to learn about. If you do know how to select units and move units, you can do that. You can skip that and move on to some of the more advanced. And when I say advanced, we're really talking about the basics here anyway for players, the more advanced basic things you need to know to play. But what we've also done is we've put videos into the game as well. And those are there available so that players, even if they're done, they've done the tutorial or they skipped it, and then they get in the middle of playing the campaign and they get stuck and they're not quite understanding, wait, how do I move a unit? How do I attack? We actually have videos available that they can watch for reference so they can understand that as well. So I think the sum total of those things presents the best rollout of information to new players coming into our RTS games for sure.
We also have a really extensive tip system that we use throughout the game to bring up information you may need about maybe how certain specific mission objectives work, or maybe some strategies you could use to complete those objectives in a couple of cases. We have, for the very newest users, we have a lot of text that we're using, you know, popping up on screen at key moments. We did some usability testing with people here in our studio, not as sophisticated as some studios I know do it, but we did do some usability testing where we watched new users play and we could see where they were getting confused or making mistakes, and we tried to sort of provide them with some additional tools, especially on the easier difficulty settings, that will sort of show them, you know, what they need to do to succeed. I guess the final sort of thing that we have that is really sort of our last attempt to help players new to the experience is we have now 4 levels of difficulty in our game, which is more than we've had before, which will allow users to select a difficulty level that's hopefully appropriate to them. We can also change the difficulty throughout the campaign at any time you want. You can go up or you can go down to try out different difficulty levels. We have the ability to replay any of the missions you've played already at a different difficulty level if you want to as well, so you can sort of test and see, am I really ready for hard, or do I want to just stay at, you know, normal, and that's my skill level. So we've given them a lot of tools. We hope we've done enough to help new users out. We know that strategy games can be challenging to play and learn. We've watched enough new users to understand, I think, how scary it can be for a lot of people to do this. But we've put a lot of stuff out there to really let you get into the campaign, let you understand it, and hopefully give users enough tools through challenge mode and through our matchmaking system, ultimately, to allow them to, at some point when they're ready, you know, graduate into online play.
So how many guys do you think at Blizzard so far has beat the campaign on the hardest level?
Oh,
that's a good question. I don't even know. Yeah.
Well, I've beaten it on the hardest level at least 5 or 6 times now. I know most of the designers have done the same as well. I mean, we've all been through it so many times at this point, just looking for mistakes, balance problems, bugs, anything we can do to improve the achievement system. Like, we're constantly playing as much of the game as we can from top to bottom.
I think what's interesting, going back to the tutorial question, Dustin was talking about the tips and the information. One of the things that I've realized, and I think we've realized as a team across this, is there is so much information to tell, is balancing what's too much versus too little, between the tips, between mission specific and mechanics that you need to explain to the player. It starts to become a lot of information, and it's a difficult, you know, tightrope to walk, to see what information needs to be presented and not, because we can actually overwhelm the user, and that can be almost worse than trying to explain.
Than doing nothing.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You can present too much information.
I think you definitely gain a new appreciation for pro players operating at like 300 APM now.
Absolutely.
Too. All the tips that are probably going off.
Absolutely.
So also introduced in beta as well, as people got online, was they saw the achievement system, and they saw that they were able to win lots of in-game awards, avatars, decals. What are some of you guys' favorite kind of achievements there, and kind of what overall is the design goal with the achievements?
Well, the goal for the achievement system is to try to get players, you know, there's a lot of different things it does for us, as it's done for many other games that have come before us who have used, you know, similar systems. But the goal is to get players, you know, to try things they haven't tried before, to learn a little bit about the game because they're perusing the achievements. They might learn things that exist that they didn't even know was possible in the game. And it's also to get players sort of rewards for having done behavior that hopefully is already fun for them, right? So we're definitely trying to provide players with achievements that are focused on things that we know are fun for players to do already. And we're definitely trying to keep away from achievements. I'm not sure we've been 100% successful, but we're working to be as close to this as we can to get them to doing achievements that are already sort of fun, you know, experiences. So the goal for the whole achievements is just to get them out there and get them to sort of, you know, play in lots of different ways and to get rewards, you know, for doing that. In terms of my favorite achievements, I'm going to be always sort of shooting for those 1v1 and team play portraits. Those are the ones that are the best looking portraits we could find. We put into that area of the game to really encourage a lot of the players to play the competitive play. But there are a lot of really great portraits to be had by playing throughout the campaign. And there's a lot of great, I know one really great portrait for the challenge mode.
Which one would that be?
It's the Spectre portrait, actually. It's really, really cool.
I thought you were going to say something else.
No,
really? Sure.
There is a great portrait of a mercenary Goliath out there that everyone, I think, should get at some point. But I think that's high up on the team playlist. It's going to be hard for people to get.
You're not talking about that really scary looking one?
It's the scary looking one.
Right,
the scars. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, the one professional model guy that we brought
in. That's the one. But the, yeah, so we're really hoping that players will get out there and try to get a lot of these different portraits. There's a lot of really fun stuff, I think, in the achievement system. Certainly, you know, the achievement system for us hasn't been online the whole time. You know, we've been working on it as we've been developing the game. So we've played for, you know, many, many months or even years in many of the game modes without any achievement system. And then we've been able to play it with the achievement system, you know, now that it's online. And it really does change the way you want to play the game. It really makes it a lot more enjoyable. I know for me, playing through the beta, I was obsessing about my win-loss ratio, right? Worried that I wasn't winning enough games, right? And just freaking out about this. And when the achievement system came online, I became just much more interested in getting one more win so that I could get closer to that next achievement. And so for me, it was a much more positive experience because I could simply, you know, I knew I was going to win about half my games. That's the way our you know, our ladder is set up. That's the way our matchmaking is set up. We try to match you against evenly skilled opponents, which means if we're doing our jobs correctly and you're playing, you know, as hard as you can, we should be able to give you, you know, a 50-50 win-loss record, which, you know, means that that can be sometimes a little bit scary, you know, playing through. I kind of wish I could win 70% of my games and I don't care what happens to the other guy, right? Like, I kind of just want to win more than my share. But now, you know, with the achievement system, it's much easier to focus on trying to get that next portrait, trying to get that next decal, right? Trying to get that next reward. And it's, I think it's just a much more fun experience.
So, I mean, looking at one more of the large pillars of StarCraft II, which is being single player, something that people talked about a lot. I know a lot of people hoped it would be in the beta, but of course, you know, we wanted to save a lot of surprises. How do you feel the new features for single player have added to the game, and what are some of your favorite new features that have gone into single player that makes it really different from other RTS games as well as the original StarCraft?
I mean, the biggest thing about it, and we've talked a lot about this, is player choice. There's just a... The adventure is your own. You know, you go and look at our previous efforts in RTS, and it's a linear experience. We just present you with information, and then you play. Now the player gets to explore, play the missions they want to play, and then pick the way they want to play them through the armies that they build up, whether it be mercenaries or the technologies they choose, you know, research in the lab. And then the whole experience of going through, learning more about Jim Raynor, the different characters, their motivations, that whole thing is just, it's a very different experience. You know, we've never rolled out the single player in our betas previously. We won't likely do that in the future, so we never intended to do that. I know the community was excited, thinking we would, but that wasn't ever part of our plan. But ultimately, I think, you know, all of the, we've had press out now, we've had a lot of players that have played it, we've heard a lot of internal feedback on it. I think it's a really new and fun experience. We're really excited to see what the world thinks once it lands.
I totally agree. I think the player choice is really, really key. And I think what's really fun about it, you know, I've played it way too many times at this point, but what's really fun about it still for us now is that I can still play through it in a different way. I'll get to a mission with different technology. I'll get to a mission with different research I've ever had before, and I'm suddenly presented with a new tactical challenge that I have not yet seen, and I've played through this game so many times. So I know that many players will play through it once, and that's great, but I think for those players who do want to play through it multiple times, they will find that the order they play the missions in, the types of technology choices they make, the types of research choices they make, the types of mercenaries they choose to hire fundamentally sort of alters some of the basic challenges you're facing, and it keeps the game very fresh after many, many playthroughs.
Also, my final question actually about patches. What are kind of your plans as far as like moving forward? Are there going to be a lot of mini patches? Are there going to be like kind of more infrequent, kind of larger patches? And what can people expect as far as like post-game support?
Well, we're definitely going to patch. I think that's one of the things that, you know, is part of Blizzard's magic, is we continue to support the game for a long time. Obviously, we have expansions coming out. All along the way, we'll be releasing patches. Some will have features in them. Some will only address balance. Some will, you know, they'll ebb and flow as far as how big they are. You know, we have something planned probably a month or two out already with some minor features being added in there, just tweaks to things. There will also, I'm sure, be some balance reaction in there, and then before the end of the year, we're intending to put out a fairly a larger size patch, which has some things related to tournaments or really the esport community. And so the specific features we're still working on for that patch, so I don't have any specifics to go into, but that's something we hope to drop before the end of the year. So, you know, something every 2 or 3 months will definitely be coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, you know, balance, we'll do whatever is sort of necessary, you know, at the time. Obviously, we're going to continue to be you know, as cautious as we dare, right? I want to make sure that the community has had a chance to play with new stuff when they get a chance to play with it, and that they are, in fact, identifying a problem for us correctly. But the minute we know a problem is real, you mean that we're convinced it's got to be changed, we're going to try to get a patch, you know, out there as soon as is humanly possible, because we don't want people playing with stuff that we know is broken. It drives us crazy as much as it does the guys playing it, because we're playing with you guys every night too. So if I'm getting, you know, zealot rushed and I can't win a game as Terrans, you can better believe I'm going to make a change tomorrow morning. So we'll definitely be looking, you know, to do whatever we can, you know, when it makes sense for us to do. So we'll try to be as aggressive as we can with problems. And then, like Chris says, making sure that we are keeping up sort of a consistent, you know, sort of patch structure to solve bugs and to add little features and that kind of stuff.
So is there anything else you guys would like to add or, you know, leave with the community before they actually get the game that you guys have been working so hard on?
Well, I mean, it's about a month out and we couldn't be more excited. This is real. You know, we're finally there. We've been waiting a very long time to share this with the world, and the beta was a first step in that, but now here comes the real game, and it's about to launch. So for me, at least, I'm super excited. I can't wait for the public to actually get their hands on single player, get out there and enjoy it, see all these things that we've been working such a long time and so hard on, and see the reaction and start getting involved with everybody.
Yeah, I'd like to just thank all the beta players as well, whether, you know, you were a low-ranked bronze or the top of diamond or somewhere in between. I guarantee you helped us by playing our game. You provided feedback. You gave us data, whether you meant to or not, that we got by looking at your win-loss records, by looking at how, you know, your play affected the community. Everyone who played in our beta helped balance StarCraft II and made StarCraft II the game it is today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time, guys.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
And a special thank you to our listeners as well. If you love the insider perspectives and all things Blizzard, subscribe to BlizzCast on iTunes or via our RSS feed. This concludes BlizzCast 14, and we look forward to seeing you all on Battle.net soon.
BlizzCast, your official Blizzard podcast.